Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. All right, the boys are back. Shot and a beer one more time. We are really excited about today's episode. We have our first returning guest.
Hey.
Mostly because he brought our guest, but we love him anyway. Let's get this party started with introductions, of course, always to my right. The lovely and talented Matty Bird.
Oh, Captain, my Captain. How goes it, sir?
It's going well, sir. How are you?
I'm top notch. Hanging in there.
Been performing lately?
Been performing. I had hosted my first open mic at Second Wind. I'm now the permanent host at a Second Wind in Santee on Mondays.
Oh, wow.
That was fun.
That's a brand new show, isn't
it? It's a brand new show and a brand new mic, brand new bar. So
did they buy you a brand new mic?
They have. So this bar is obviously a very working class bar.
Very working class.
But they have the most spectacular lighting rig.
Really?
I've ever seen. And the gentleman who owns the bar also owns Navajo Live.
Oh, perfect.
So he specializes in like these small bar shows.
Excellent. Yes, he does.
Oh, so it's a live entertainment venue, bands and all that.
Absolutely.
It's one of the things I liked about Navajo Live is that for a bar show, they have a stage, they have lighting, they have sound, they
and
have
a very, lot of things. A really good sound system.
Yeah, they have a lot of things that a lot of bar shows don't.
Those little things really go to help to make a bar show work.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than when the speaker system can't overpower a rowdy crowd.
Right.
So you're
as
already.
It happens in bars.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Once.
The other voice that you have heard during this conversation is a longtime friend of the show and a longtime friend of mine. We welcome back photographer Rob Forsyth. How are you, Rob?
Howdy, howdy. I'm doing great.
You are everywhere.
I literally am everywhere. I've multiplied myself.
I don't know. I honestly, it's one of those things where people say, I don't know where you find the hours of the day. I really don't in your case. You seem to be photographing 6 different events on the same day, and I have no idea how you're doing that.
It's very, very tight scheduling. But yeah, some days will be 6 events, and some days will be no events, and I'll work on all the pictures from the past events.
Well, you, as we discovered on our first show with you, our first go-round, as it were, you take a long time to edit.
Generally not. I'm one of the faster.
I thought you did.
No, I'm one of the faster editors. That's why.
I remember you talking about that you actually pride yourself
you
on.
You have a better turnaround.
Because I'm the exact opposite.
And who am I thinking of?
Me.
Oh, you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I take the pictures on the weekend here, and I always feel bad about that because I am definitely a point, you know, like I'm taking manual photos,
right.
And trying, but I'm definitely taking more than I need and go, oh, good, I'm glad I took 30.
Gone on and on, more and more efficient with pictures. I used to be maybe 50% made it out. Now about 95% of my pictures make it out.
Oh, so, that's incredible.
Yeah, so
that's incredible.
I've gotten it down to I know what I need for what I need, and whatever the customer or whoever requires, I get that out. That's what I paid for.
Are all these in relation to Chef's Roll?
No, I still do a lot of independent photography, a lot of freelance for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Well, and you're getting to the point where you know everybody in town.
Exactly. This is true, and they'll call me up. And I've gotten to the point where I can't take last-minute deals.
Wow.
Yeah. I have to have at least 2 weeks out now, minimum. I'm planning already next year.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Well, that sucks. Because, you know, I always call you.
Yes, I know.
I always call you the day before.
Yeah, but I generally
know.
Hey,
what are you doing tomorrow?
I generally know what you're about to do, so I'll keep that kind of open anyway.
Yeah, I'm not. None of my activities are ever rendered as secret.
Yeah, I know. I know my friends that are going to be last minute type people, and I'll keep the date open in my brain. It won't necessarily be on calendar, but it'll be open in my brain. I'm like, I know something's going to happen this day. And then, of course, Carl will call up or, you know, some other chef. Hey, can you come down and shoot today?
Hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm in the Bahamas right now. Kidding.
Our other guest, I am really, really interested in talking to because she's one of those people who very quietly has established herself a very, very nice food and beverage career. Doesn't have a lot of notoriety, but has huge experience and some really, really great experience, the lovely Ashley Drake.
Hi there, Carl. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Why don't, since I mentioned your experience, why don't we run that down a little bit? I know you actually through Rob. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started to talk to you about potentially being on the show, knowing some of your experience, that I kind of got the rundown. And you have done a hell of a lot.
A lot. More than most, probably.
especially in the food and beverage area.
I don't think we have the time to go through her whole
resume.
I mean, yeah, honestly, she's literally been in the trade half of her life.
Jesus.
I started as a child in child labor. No, I'm just kidding. As most restaurateurs do. No.
As a wee girl of four. Well, so how did you get your start in the industry?
So I'll give you the Reader's Digest version, but I actually started as a musician when I was younger, and I wanted to go to Juilliard. When I hit high school, I played flute, French horn, trumpet, you name it, I played it.
Wow.
As long as it's not a string instrument, it's good with me. So about junior year, Art Institute came to my high school and did a presentation. Mm-hmm. And in that presentation was the culinary school program that they were building. And I was hooked. I've been baking since I was about six.
And they lied to you.
And they took
and
all
you
my
bought
money.
The lie.
I sure did. I was super impressionable. So I decided to give up my music career and go a different way, thinking that hospitality was a more sustainable career for me versus musicianship.
Lie number one.
I figure people always have to eat, but they don't always need an orchestra member or whatever else. And I didn't want to have to worry about gigs to try to get me by. And,
right.
So I went to culinary school, the Art Institute here in San Diego, and then was working in different catering companies like Waters. And my very first culinary job, or job in general, was Panda Express. I was your token white girl. And that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
The cooks liked to teach me how to use the giant woks and all that. So when I finished...
Well, working for Waters is pretty... That's pretty elite as far as the catering goes in this town.
Yeah,
had to have given you a great eye for presentation,
exactly,
and appreciation of really good ingredients.
Yeah, Mary Kay, Andrew Spurgeon was there at the time, Saul Paniagua. The team was amazing, and I worked my way up from the little deli all the way up through on-site chef. So within a matter of a year or so, I kind of got the full spectrum of the company, and then I took my first executive chef position when I was about 19. So
where at?
It was a little restaurant down the street from Waters. So it was called Lot 81. It, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't think it lasted very long. I was there consulting for about 6 months, and I moved on because I was kind of afraid of the business model. It wasn't running the way I thought was efficient for a business to run, as most restaurants
do. Hard to
believe.
No.
Hard to believe.
So for my own viability, I decided to move on, and I ended up working for Addison at the Grand Del Mar, and then I moved on to personal chefing.
Holy shit.
Yeah, she has some legit creds.
I've been around the block, yeah.
You're another Kat Humphries.
Right?
Maybe.
Exactly.
When we were talking to Kat, it was like sitting here with my mouth hanging open. She's like, oh, yeah, and then I worked for this guy, and then I went and worked for Thomas Keller, and I'm like...
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Got to move on and get experience.
Addison.
Mm-hmm.
And then where from there?
So, unfortunately, after I left Addison, I decided to move with my ex-husband to Texas, and we moved to a small little town in the Panhandle. And kind of put my career on hiatus. I was pregnant with my daughter, so I took a job managing a restaurant and a health food store, which is what it is. Health food isn't really my thing. I'm not a fan of the vegan cuisine, you could say.
Health food's not anybody's thing.
I know.
Exactly.
So I did a couple dead-end jobs in the culinary or hospitality world there, but finally moved back about 3 years ago and then moved to the Westgate Hotel as a food and beverage manager, and then moved on from there to go to Kitchen 4140 as a GM. So,
holy cow.
I kind of went to the front of the house thinking I'd have more of a life, but that sure as hell didn't
happen. Lie number two.
Yeah. I thought it seemed like practical or something. But.
Or the Art Institute. There's someone at the Art Institute going.
All the way to the bank. Yep, yeah, for sure. So.
Wow. Yeah. I had no idea. I really didn't. And now you're doing chocolates.
Yeah, now I make amazing, interesting little chocolates and different dessert pieces. I'm not so much a pastry chef, I would say, as more of a savory chef, but I fell into chocolatiering because I like to merge the two.
Right.
So I like making savory ingredients in the chocolates that make it more interesting than just your normal sweet See's Candy truffle, you know.
You are the second chocolatier we've had on the show. We had Laura Lou Davis on before she moved back to Ohio. And her style of chocolates were very much that way.
Mm-hmm.
She liked mixing the savory with the sweet. And we tried a couple of her
chocolates. Oh, they were delicious.
They were really,
amazing.
Really good. Not overly sweet, because I'm not a big chocolate guy.
Me neither.
She doesn't like sweets.
I don't really eat a lot of sweets. And that's the thing that interests me with chocolate is it's so diverse. It's so, the palate is so broad that you can really do so much with it. And I think, you know, we'll be out at dinner or lunch and I'll try something new. I'll be like, I have to mix this with chocolate. We're actually here at the Stone Beer Dinner.
Right.
And I tried the Joco Vesa with the Rich Sweeney's dessert. Yeah. And I said, this is amazing. We have to put it. And I made a truffle out of it. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, the Joco Vesa is such a brilliant beer.
It's amazingly brilliant.
I'm generally not one to, I don't drink a lot of beer anyway, but I wouldn't think dessert beer
right
until I tasted that. And that, for dessert purposes, I've had a bunch of stouts, chocolate stouts, coffee stouts, peanut butter stouts. That blows everyone away.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's like Mexican hot chocolate in a stout.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It really is. It's spectacular. I am floored. You, my God, you're the draft pick that went to a team that went to the playoffs every single year.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Wow.
I worked hard to get there.
What exactly is the process of churning an item into a truffle or combining something into a truffle form?
It's kind of a long process. It's funny because Rob jokes about the fact that I have zero patience, which is very true. I have no patience.
None whatsoever.
But I spend
I wouldn't imagine that is helpful with somebody. Part of the reason that I'm not a pastry chef is because I'm way too ADD.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the formula.
Right.
I want to open the oven and make sure it's doing what it's supposed to do.
Which
and
will kill
a lot of baked goods just really don't, they don't enjoy
they don't,
that
they
at
don't
all.
Like them
right.
But like for chocolate, it's just tempering and
it's more
smoothing
it's methodical.
And
you
all.
Know?
Yeah, but if you rush any of that process,
it won't
you
work.
Can't.
Yeah, you
and,
can't.
And it's not like something you can kind of repair.
No, you definitely
start
can't.
Start the hell back over.
Exactly. It works or it doesn't. And in fact, I recently did the chef throwdown at the Hotel Del, and I had a whole like 20 or 30 truffles just not come out of the mold. And there's nothing I could do. They cracked in the middle, that they were too thin, and I was trying to rush it, and that's what happens. But the process itself is actually, you know, you have to make the filling first, depending on whatever ganache filling or caramel filling, whatever you're making the filling with. And I don't use any additives or preservatives, so I always try to make sure I buy the freshest of everything so the shelf life is as long as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make the filling. The filling has to be tempered more or less, come to room temperature, and not be too hot or too cold so you can pipe it. And then you have to temper chocolate, either milk white or dark. Mm-hmm. And I have polycarbonate molds, about 25 or so different molds. You have to polish the molds, make sure they're completely clean, or the chocolate will stick. You temper
and polycarb molds are not cheap.
No, they're not.
Being a chocolatier is
it's very pricey.
Yeah, there's a lot of none of that equipment is inexpensive.
No, and it's taken me a lot of time to build up my arsenal per se. And every time I sell product, all I do is turn around and buy more material in return because I'm a completely self-funded, you know, single owner operator. So it's tricky, you know. Sometimes I can say at Christmas time I've been worried about buying the kids Christmas presents because I'm spending and investing in my chocolate company.
Yep.
So, but, I mean, once you get the chocolate tempered, you basically take the mold and you fill it with chocolate, turn it upside down, empty it out, all the chocolate runs out, let
it
set.
She beats the hell out of the mold.
My neighbors, I don't know why they haven't complained or called the cops yet because I'm always hitting the counters, getting all the air bubbles out.
Yep.
And then once it's crystallized and set, you do the filling. It has to be set as well. Sometimes I chill it. And then you put the third layer, which is the bottom of the truffle, on top and smooth it out, tap it again, you know, piss off some more neighbors. That's it.
Sounds very violent.
It's super violent. It helps me get my aggression out.
I think it's quite cathartic for her, actually. I think that's where the patience comes from.
Yeah, that's where it goes, at least.
And looking across the table, I can see why she needs something like
that. Right, exactly.
you have no idea.
But you don't have it in Roebury, I am assuming.
No, because I generally do molded.
You do molded?
Yeah. So, and robing, I could do, but the equipment's so expensive.
Yeah.
And I prefer
And hand enrobing, it's really, really wasteful.
It's just, it's super wasteful. It's monotonous. It doesn't create as nice of a result, you know? So.
Do you know what enrobing is, Maddie?
No, not a clue.
It's basically,
one of those words I just
kind
of. It's kind of
reversing the process that she does. You do the filling.
Okay.
And get it set. And then you
cut it or stamp it or however.
Yeah, you cut it or stamp it, and you get your little piece, and then liquid chocolate falls over the top of it. It's either poured over or in the enrobing machines, they have like a track that they run on. The extra chocolate goes down, gets recycled, but in order to do it in a smaller operation, you either have to pour it over and then pour it back, pour the excess off, or you have to hand dip them, which is, I would imagine, monotonous as hell.
It's very monotonous, and I don't like the presentation as much. It does have its applications, but for what I like in my brand.
Do you shine doing it that way?
No, not if it's tempered properly. And that's the thing is, I kind of pride myself on my truffles having a very thin shell, which is difficult to obtain, but I, with all the experience, the 5 years or however long I've been doing this, it's something that I think is great because it's hard to get that fine of small of a or thin of a shell, but it creates more attention on the filling. In the filling, it should be complementing the outside, in my opinion, or vice versa. You know, but your focus should really be on what's inside, not really what's on the outside. And that's why I don't use coating chocolate either. I use only couverture. So
good.
Yeah.
Good coating chocolate. I know. Disgusting. I've had chocolates that have had coating chocolate on them.
They don't melt.
It was too, it was too thick. And these things were like bulletproof.
It's like the McDonald's of chocolate.
Yeah, and I didn't like them at all.
They have no flavor, and the difference there is the cocoa butter, because if you have a coating chocolate, it's got some sort of oil or lecithin and all those items that make it bind and make it perfect to stick, but it doesn't have that thing we call flavor that's kind of awesome. So
I'm glad that the phenomenon of the chocolate fountain has finally gone away.
Oh my gosh.
If there is one thing that chefs, and I'm sure chocolatiers, consistently hate, is people going, I'd love to have a chocolate fountain. Mm.
Let me tell you a story.
They're a fucking mess,
no matter
how careful you are. Number two, the chocolate is absolute garbage.
You know, so the funny story is, people actually, recently, someone asked me if I did chocolate fountains. I was like, hell no.
No.
I worked at Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory when I was in culinary school as a part-time job. And I made hundreds of caramel apples and all this other, you know, shit all the time, which was fun at the time. But then they decided that they wanted to do chocolate fountains at events. And someone had to stay there and watch over the chocolate fountain. So, then they chose me because I was basically the manager at that point. So I would go to events with this fountain and the chocolate that we added oil to make it viscous enough to go through the fountain.
Gross.
Exactly. And I swear to God, full-grown adults would act like children. And they would come trying to stick their faces in it or their glasses in it. And I'm like, ma'am, this is recycled. You can't stick your body parts into it. That's just gross. Nobody else wants to eat that. Like, what is wrong with you?
And that's why Carl is not allowed back at the chocolate fountain.
Yes, absolutely not. I've worked at hotels. I worked at a hotel. We actually had our own.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
And it's
so
messy.
The cleanup is just insane.
You know, you just take it, you dump it in a bucket. You can use it again. I mean, chocolate's, it's great in that respect, but The problem is once you start dipping stuff into that stream, it splatters and it's everywhere. Or my favorite is when people wanted to have it outside. I'm like, let's think this through. It's breezy here in San Diego. Right. Now your wall is covered in chocolate and there's nothing I'm going to do about it, you know?
Well, and not only that, it's the, if it's not perfectly level, it doesn't cascade right and you have to manipulate it and you don't know whether it's perfectly level until it's already working and running. Oh, they're just,
they're
and it's,
stupid.
It screws up your banquet table because people forget that it's liquid and they pull it back so you get little dribbles.
And it stains. Chocolate's horribly, it's horrible with stains.
I hate them.
Yep.
Hate them, hate them.
I'm glad we agree.
And I'm glad that that fad has kind of faded away.
Yeah.
That and mashed potato bars.
It's so gross.
Ew, I didn't think that
was
a thing.
What are carbs?
Well, guys, we are 20 minutes in, and as tradition dictates, it's time to hoist one. So, Rob, welcome back. Ashley, it is wonderful having you here.
Thank you.
Bullet bourbon.
It's like
never
morning,
fails.
It's like morning breakfast.
So, Rob, what's been going on lately in town? Were you at Barry Goodnight?
I was at Barry Goodnight, but as a guest this year, 1.5 years into the...
You didn't have to photograph
I did
it?
Not have to photograph. I was
How's that?
Quite honored. It was actually quite nice. I shot a wedding that morning, or that afternoon, actually. So that was pretty much the reason I couldn't shoot it, but... It was nice just walking in, putting my bags down, and walking around and saying hi to everyone.
And eating.
And this year was amazing the way they had it laid out. You could sit and talk to everyone. All the chefs were out. The guests got to mingle with the chefs. Everyone had stations instead of sit-down fancy dinner. It was just an industry get-together.
You know,
it was amazing.
The one thing that I never liked about doing Mama's Day is that Mama's Day was great. In that it gets you exposure, you get to meet, especially when I worked at the handlery, we got to see a lot of people who had no idea who we were.
Exactly.
And the accolades, the feedback you get is, hey, I really am doing good food and all that. But it's such, you're so swamped so quick.
You can't have any fun.
You don't really have an interaction with anybody.
Exactly.
You get to spend, I love doing festivals and that sort of thing because it's kind of like doing the showcase nights here at the Madhouse. I like hanging out with comedians.
Exactly.
I like hanging out with chefs. Mm-hmm. And stuff like Mama's Day, it's such a hassle to get in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And get out. And don't, please, if anybody's listening to this, please don't get me wrong. It is a wonderful event.
It's
love
amazing
doing it.
Event.
The logistics
is crazy.
Are kind of a bitch.
Right.
Especially with everybody trying to get in and out at the same time. And you really don't get to talk to anybody.
No, of course. You're too wound up in your own thing, and everyone else is too wound up in their own thing, and then you're separated from the general public or whoever's out there, and, yeah, it's impossible to...
And the only time we'd ever see any of the other chefs would be they'd swing by to get a cocktail because we always had liquor.
Well, yeah, of course.
We tend to know where those people are.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, if I'm at an event, everybody knows.
Everyone knows.
Everybody knows where it is. So what's it like... It's always weird for me when I go to a festival or I go to a dinner that I'm not cooking at.
It is odd.
What's it like, especially for you, since you shoot so many of these things, do you feel weird not working?
Sometimes I do, only because everyone recognizes me with a camera around my neck.
Right.
Other than that, they're like, hey, how's it going? Oh, wait, you're Rob. You know, it's always, I'm always taken aback by that, but other than that, I think it's actually great. I like attending, and I like most of the people I deal with on a regular basis. So being able to just chat with them or enjoy their food without having to take a picture of it,
right,
and then take a picture of them and take a picture of everything else, it's actually quite enjoyable now. I'm to that point in my career that I can allow myself to enjoy some time off or enjoy a festival here or a dinner there without having to worry about working.
Even when you are working and you're hanging out and all that, you're still, I imagine you're still processing.
Of course.
I should shoot this. I should get that.
Of course.
And it's like that for me when I'm not actively participating in the event, my head is still, I would have done this, I would have done that.
Of course, we're hustlers.
How we would have.
We hustle. We're hustlers, and that's what happens. And you can relax and have fun, but you're always still working in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what successful people do. The non-successful people
don't care.
Then why am I not successful?
No,
you're successful.
It's the analytical side.
I think you're about successful enough in San Diego.
You're as successful as you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. We'll go
Great. I've reached the apex.
Life goals.
You have plateaued, my friend. You have plateaued.
So, with all that you've done, Ashley, since I just looking at you doesn't really do any good for anybody who's not, since this isn't a video podcast, do you think you'll ever go back to just front of the house, or are you locked back into the back for good now?
I kind of do both at times. I'm a very, I love people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hate people, but I do, I have a heart for making people happy. I'm a people pleaser. That's the person that I am. So in that respect, I feel like I'm always kind of 30-70, but mm-hmm. when I wasn't cooking professionally, I felt like I was wasting time. And I'm kind of a motivated go-getter type person, and for me to waste time is not a happy place for me. So right. while I felt that I did my job well, and I thought, you know, the food and beverage management side of it was a great avenue for me to learn and grow, I don't think I would go back to it.
It's funny how you get so comfortable in certain roles. When I first took over the Madhouse, I did a lot of stuff with the front of the house. Mm-hmm. But as the front of the house kind of got a little more locked in, I ended up drifting, and I'm back cooking on the line at least 3, maybe 4 nights a week now. It's just, I'm the same way. I feel more productive and like I'm doing more for the club by doing what I do back there.
Exactly.
Than I do out front.
Right.
And unlike you, I hate people.
I certainly
I'm 70-30 the other direction.
Right.
I'd say you're 90-10.
It's not true though. That's not you are such a people person.
You're a selective people person.
You're selective.
Yeah, and selective, of course.
But you're extremely gregarious and comfortable.
I am comfortable
situation.
That's a large word.
I don't
like on a customer service aspect. It's not enjoyable.
And no,
especially
God, no.
For me when you know, I'm sure, working at a hotel, I had some really, really terrible guests. Yeah. And they make me feel bad because all I want to do is make them happy, and that's my job. But at the same time, sometimes...
I don't know if Carl ever had that problem.
Well,
I want
he
to
had
make
to
you
deal
happy.
With someone who did, so that's
yeah,
it.
No, I sent people to make them happy. I'll do whatever they want me to do.
Right.
I just don't want to fucking listen to it.
Well, exactly. And I had to be the ears, so yeah. It was pretty exhausting, I can tell you. So, but my goal, my ultimate goal is to, you know, have my chocolatiering business really take off, and I can do both. And I'm going to be actually at Catalina Offshore next Saturday doing a little booth sale. But the fun part of those is that I get to talk to the customers mm-hmm. and explain my product. And like Rob said, you know, we actually were going to do it last weekend, but we had a prior obligation. He said, no one else can talk about your product with the passion that you can.
Right.
So why send someone else? It's not going to do you any good.
One of the things that is one of the myriad of great things about Tommy is that Tommy's a very much from the horse's mouth.
Oh yeah, we love that.
He's a straight shooter.
He will open up his place of business to anybody, but that anybody has to be passionate about their product. He doesn't want a spokesman. He wants you.
Exactly.
He wants the chef who is actually doing the food. And he's, you know, Tommy's such a genuine, true to himself kind of guy.
Exactly. You're not gonna get any bullshit from Tommy.
And it's I think it's really cool that he's opening up Catalina Offshore Seafood Warehouse to a chocolatier.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, he's been so supportive. He helped sponsor some of my product for the Chef Throwdown, and he's always been really supportive. We kind of stopped by.
What'd you get from Tommy for that?
Eggs.
I made a mousse. I needed dairy. So it was just.
Say, would he slice you off a piece of shark?
Yes.
That's what I told her. I'm like, we can go to Tommy for something, but I don't know what kind of fish products you're gonna put in a truffle, but
shrimp truffles.
That's the next big
garnished
thing.
With bonito.
Ooh.
No. So no, but he's been really supportive and wonderful, as many of our friends have. So it's always great to work with other industry people, you know, that I've worked with in the past and kind of take this new path and see how it evolves. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, yes. Tommy's an awesome guy.
San Diego has awesome. An interesting clique, I guess you would say. There's a certain amount of chefs that will always stick together, a certain amount of the industry that will always scratch each other's back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nice thing about San Diego. I've noticed in other parts, L.A. or New York.
Yeah, because you're shooting kind of nationally now,
aren't
you?
Yeah, exactly. I noticed that they're not all like that. Not everyone's like San Diego.
It's a different dynamic, for
they,
sure.
They will turn around, rub your back, and say, oh, hi, nice. They're just rubbing your back to see where the soft spot is so they can stick the knife.
Right.
But San Diego's not so much like that. I mean, there are, of course, a select few people that are like that. Mm-hmm. But for the whole, San Diego's very supportive of itself.
Yeah, it's one of the things that really kind of makes me love the culinary scene here is that I have, you know, you can tell by the guest list on this show, these are all my folks.
Exactly.
And it kind of runs the gamut of all the different kinds of cuisine in town, but we've all struck a really kind of cool balance. We are, yes, competitors, for lack of a better term.
Right.
But we're all in the same fraternity.
Exactly.
And it's really cool for me to see some of the movement, and the people, no matter where they're working, they're still the same.
Exactly.
They're still the same. You talk to, you know, two of my favorite guys in town. You talk to Hannes. Hannes has opened his third location.
Exactly.
Hannes is still
amazing.
Hannes
is still Hannes.
Hannes is still Hannes. And he's never going to not be Hannes.
Exactly.
Rich Sweeney is, you know, the Waypoint is getting ready to open a bunch of new places.
Exactly.
Rich is still Rich.
Rich is still Rich. The Big Bear.
He's so sweet, yeah.
He's the sweetest guy in the world.
Oh, he really is. He's a wonderful guy. And, you know, one of the ways you can tell that is if you go to Waypoint Public now, half of his staff from our gang is now working at Waypoint.
Exactly.
If they're going back to work just because he's there, it's a testament to how great Rich is.
Exactly.
And it's a rare one in this industry, that's for sure.
What'd you guys think of the latest big move with Anthony Sensei taking over J6?
I think that's a great move for him.
I do too.
I think Dukes was good for him, but I think J6 will be amazing for him.
Yeah, I think that Anthony kind of, the Anthony that I know, the guy I know from dinners and collaborations and all that, really needs to kind of be running his own show.
Definitely. You've had him here.
Yeah, and I think Dukes was, and not to say anything ill about Dukes, they're a fine company.
Amazing, yes.
But it's a little more corporately structured
exactly.
than he's used to, for lack of a better term.
I think most chefs aren't used to that,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah,
especially San Diego.
We're not really built for that.
You know, I came from... It's weird when you come from a corporate background, because all my hotel experience was Opryland, Hilton,
of
Sheraton.
Of course, very corporate.
Just very, very
extremely
corporate,
yeah.
I got to the handlery, and it, all bets were off.
Right.
And we were basically doing our own thing. And once you get a little taste of that, it's tough going back.
Yep,
of course.
Very.
It really is. And he enjoyed such a... spectacular run at, what was that, Seersucker?
Yeah.
And they changed it, right?
I believe so.
Because he was at Seersucker, and then they changed it to whatever other fabric, polyvinyl, nylon, tarpaulin.
Noodle bean. I don't
canvas,
know.
Or I'm not sure what the
plaster.
Other,
I think it was plaster.
What the name of it was.
Paper mache.
After he left. And he came back into town, and he's got to kind of write his own menus and do that. And he's a brilliant culinarian.
Yes, exactly. He's a brilliant chef, and he has a checkbook to write on his own accord. I mean, he has nothing to prove.
Not to anyone.
And I think J6 will be perfect for him.
Yeah.
Honestly,
it's sad. It's as great as happy as I am for Anthony. It's tough to lose a chef the caliber of Christian Graves, though.
Oh, of course.
That,
right.
As much as we are getting one of our own back into downtown,
right?
That's for the just from a talent standpoint, that's a pretty big hit.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely going to feel it. But I, the level that of excellent that Anthony's going to bring in, mm-hmm. I don't think they'll miss him for very long.
No, they. I don't think J6 will skip a beat.
No, definitely not.
But the overall scene. It's like when we have in the comedy side of it, when we have a guy that's kind of graduating and moving to L.A.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
There's a little dip, and there's not...
Creates a wave.
The talent pool in San Diego, and not to talk ill of it, but the talent pool of really, really great chefs, we have a pool. The pool's just not that deep.
Exactly. It's a waiting pool.
We have a puddle.
It's a waiting pool at most.
Well, it takes a shift, you know. Once one person moves on or moves up, then it creates room for another new talent.
It does.
It takes time and experience.
Tanks. Yeah.
Unless they bring the restaurant down, and then right. they generally go to Palm Springs or, you know, some other place.
But, you know, it's one of those things where we've had some really good chefs leave town.
Of course.
And you have to wonder if that's evidence of a larger problem. You know, we're not finding ways to keep these guys in town. It's difficult to open a restaurant. It's difficult to sustain a restaurant.
Exactly, like us.
In San Diego, because it's expensive here.
Well, like what I was saying last time I was on, San Diego is very fickle. One day it'll love beets. Mm-hmm. The next day it will hate beets, yep. and it'll move on to carrots. And then the next day it'll hate carrots that are done this way. But if they're charred, then everyone loves them that way. Mm-hmm. And it's very fickle. I don't know if San Diego will ever be able to sustain huge names, honestly. We don't have the attention span.
Right.
I think also, because we're huge in tourism, we have a huge wave of people coming and going constantly, especially in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. The market's constantly diverse. Other than that, it's just from my experience of seeing how the back end of how things are run in certain establishments, some people really just, they don't know what they're doing. Open restaurants, they throw money at it thinking, well, if I get it open and I get everything going and I hire a chef, it'll run itself. It's not the case. And
a lot of times it's style over substance.
Exactly. And then, in a bad way, but most chefs aren't business people. I mean, we understand how to run food cost and how to run a kitchen efficiently
and
labor. You have to, or you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
And that being said, though, they don't realize or underestimate the overhead that's involved with running an establishment itself. So working for a chef owner is different than working for a chef with, you know, possibly a silent investor or, you know, someone else who's running the show. But mm-hmm. Too often I see people everything folds overnight, and they see it coming, but they just refuse to deal with it.
Well, one of the things that you brought up, I think, is very, very important, in that San Diego, to my way of thinking, and let me know if you guys agree with this, a restaurant needs sustainability from the local market.
Of course.
San Diego is not known as a great culinary city, so I don't think that we get, even with the tremendous amount of tourism that we get, I don't think anybody is coming out here to do a culinary tour of San Diego.
It's
like they do with Napa, like they do with San Francisco, Chicago, New York.
We actually just had one. We had 80 master chefs from around the world come through San Diego.
No, that's not what I mean. Oh. What I mean is there are people who go plan a trip to New York around
a culinary
the
experience.
Seven restaurants that they're going
okay,
to go to.
Okay, I see what you're saying, yes.
That they're going to go,
agreed.
They're going to Napa, they have a reservation at the Laundry, they're going to Mustard's, they're going to...
Which
they're going,
some,
they're going
in
to
advance.
The Slanted Door in San Francisco the day before they
exactly.
go. The talent pool that we have here isn't really benefiting from the tourism, especially when they're not in the gas lamp.
Well, nothing's sustaining long enough to make that happen.
Exactly.
Right.
There's no one that's
they're coming
be
to town. They're going to Nobu.
Right, exactly.
Or they're going to that something in Harry's that's down at the end of the gas lamp by the convention center.
Right, exactly.
I think a lot of these...
I do know
everybody,
now.
Everybody knows J6 is great. Everybody who lives here knows that they're great. I don't know if anybody out of town knows that J6 is great.
I do know that Hannes is making a very big tourist stop.
Oh, with Embarcadero?
With Embarcadero, but they're also North Park. People are coming in from out of town just to go to Carnitas.
Yeah.
Hannes might be one of the only ones doing that right now, but he's been around one of the longest and had the same food. I mean,
yeah,
he's consistent.
It's consistent, and that's what needs to happen.
You don't have to worry whether you're going to get there and it's going to be closed or
exactly.
not.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about, oh, the triple threat's going to be out.
Right.
It's going to be there. It's there for you to hug and eat and dwell into. And so is Hannes. I mean, he'll always be there for you. He's a great guy and has great restaurants.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we were talking about this recently. I think the shift in the culinary world has kind of been to take more from cutthroat competitive to looking out for each other, making sure that you're forming relationships and actually following through with those relationships, because once you burn that bridge, it's pretty impossible to build it back.
Especially San Diego being as small as
it is. And
yeah.
the way it's been and who you're associated with and who you know and how you act on that, it makes a big difference on how people perceive you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to make everything as positive and make sure I am straightforward and honest as possible, because I don't want to piss off the wrong person.
Exactly.
And I honestly I'd rather live my life being that way.
The people who play fast and loose with their relationships, with their friendships,
they
with
run
their
out
business
sooner or later.
Dealings. Yeah. You know what? Since I was a nobody working at the handlery, I am really, culinarily speaking, I'm really a nobody working here at
the
club.
You're the best comedy club chef I've ever known.
I disagree.
Wow. You disagree?
No, I disagree with what you said.
Oh.
I was going to say,
what, you're placing the popcorn machine at the comedy store over me?
No. This is honestly, it's been great actually getting to know you and having your food.
Well, thank you.
Amazing.
But to my point is that as far as gaining any notoriety from associating with me, it ain't going to happen.
Right, of course.
But I'm straight up with people. To your point, Ashley, I'm straight up with people. I'm a big supporter of my friends. And no matter what happens, I have a whole list of people I know I can call saying, hey, I am out of French fries.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, and if I'm too busy here, they'll bring them to me.
Of course. You're a genuine person.
I know chefs in town who I wouldn't care if I was talking to you from a throne made of cases of French fries, like the Iron Throne in Game of Thrones, I'm out when you call.
Exactly.
And I don't, it's, you hate to say that, but you do really reap what you sow.
Exactly, you do, and it's more of your personality. That's why people do it. I mean, they'll bend over backwards because they know you'll bend over backwards in an instant.
This sounds inappropriate.
Sometimes isn't.
But oh, it's so good when it is.
I don't need to know about that.
The one thing I'd like to that I like to touch on when we have a female guest. We like to touch on our female
guests.
Likes
touching on female
guests. I didn't know it was that kind of party.
I would have dressed differently. I think San Diego is really getting a good, strong female presence in the industry.
Definitely.
And I haven't worked in a lot of different cities. I'm apparently, my bio is I'm apparently only allowed to work in 4 cities in the country.
I understand that.
Yeah, Washington, D.C., San Diego, Nashville, and Hilton Head are the really, because I've made multiple stops in all of those cities. But I've never seen a culinary scene where there were as many key players that were women as there are in town here.
Definitely.
There are a lot of really good female chefs. There's a lot of really good female brewers. There's a lot of really good female general managers and owners in town. What do you think the reason is?
You know, I'm glad it's happening now. It's been a long time coming. When I went to culinary school, let's say it was a while ago, I was one of maybe 10 mm-hmm. total in my class. And I don't think any of them really continued on to work in the culinary field. So I felt very much, you know, on the small end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. working with mainly men, and I always have. And I'm fine with that because I'm ready to prove myself to anyone.
Yep.
But it's great to see now that it's finally catching on, because I wasn't sure it would ever take that turn. It's it's mainly men in the industry, and I think so many of the women that are actually doing well now have busted their asses to get there, proved themselves to those. I was told I would never be a chef because I was a woman by someone I won't name, but I ran into them recently multiple times. It was kind of funny.
It was actually very funny.
So I think it's hilarious that, there are still people that are minded that way, but how things have evolved, it's, hey, how things have evolved, it's nice to see.
In case you're wondering, Carl raised his hand.
It's funny because a lot of the up-and-coming female chefs are about my age, so it seems like society is kind of starting to embrace that. You know?
At least San Diego.
San Diego is society,
well,
let's say.
You know, it's, I think we've talked about it on the show before. I think part of it is a lot of the old school is dying off.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We've taken a turn.
A lot of those guys that held on to those outdated ideas,
they aren't working anymore.
Their bastards are 65, 70 years old now.
Right.
And I think the industry has evolved. I think it needed to. I think it's ultimately a good thing. There are certain aspects of it that makes me sad that we're losing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall it's actually a really good thing that we are a kinder, gentler industry, for lack of a better
term. Much
different
than it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine I worked with at a catering company called Events by Christopher,
mm-hmm.
Greg DeMichael, he moved on. He came from Vegas and then moved on from San Diego up to L.A., did the TV thing for a while, moved back to New York. But he told me he was a chef over at Mandalay Bay.
I love hearing stuff like, did the TV thing for
right?
a while.
Right.
Well, he did,
what
you
the
know,
hell does TV for a while?
I don't know. He did the reality thing and chefing on different shows in L.A. But he moved back to New York and is doing his chef thing back there. But he told me when he was in Vegas, he literally had line cooks snorting coke on the line, smoking cigarettes, and one guy sold him a dog because he needed more drug money. So it's just like,
that's just Vegas in
I know,
general.
But,
yeah, that.
But it's funny because things have taken a turn in regards to, I don't know if it's more the culinary movement and culinary school, more people are going to culinary school when it got quote unquote trendy,
mm-hmm.
but the respect for the craft I think has changed a little bit to where people that want to choose culinary as a lifestyle, like per se, because it's more than a career, it really
definitely
is a lifestyle. They appreciate it more and put everything.
It's a lifestyle that smokes cigarettes, does coke, and
exactly.
has canine sales exactly. in the kitchen.
But I mean, I think that San Diego.
I just call that Tuesday. But.
San Diego as a whole has kind of taken it to respect it a little bit more. And no, we're not a culinary city yet, but hopefully in the next 50 years, whenever
right.
San Diego feels like it, we'll get there. But
if we ever do.
Because San Diego's flaky.
We like beer. With a side of Pomeranian.
We like beer.
Yeah, the beer will last, I think, but
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's definitely changed, and society is changing as a whole,
yeah.
with the way people think about everything else, gay marriage and, all the other movements that are kind of taking place with the presidential elections and all this other, stuff that's happening.
I think the big thing about the big uprising in women chefs in front of house and management is that most of the women aren't, hey, I'm a woman, see
right.
what I'm doing. They're like, hey, I'm a chef, see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to be graded.
I'm a GM.
Exactly.
Right.
They don't want to be graded on how am I doing as a woman.
They want to put the work in the same.
Exactly.
And
they
that's
want,
how I am.
They want to put the work in the same, and they want to be the same. And I think that's the big difference.
I think earning the equality is more than expecting. And you should never just expect anything, and you have to work for it. I've worked my ass off to get to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that I'm on a pedestal. I'm just trying to make it,
Right.
I'm doing the best I can, and I'm proud of myself, and I'm good with that.
And it's funny for me. And this is going to sound it's going to sound complimentary and horribly sexist at the same time.
Hard to believe.
Ooh, I love condescending things.
But I have always maintained that I think that that women have a better eye for plating.
All right. Mission accomplished, sir. Well done.
Than men do. I really do. It's just because of a lot of times the mindset.
Right.
And it floors me that we were so slow to embrace that for so long. And granted, there are a lot of chefs who plate. I don't think I plate particularly pretty. And there's a lot of guys that I know who really do, but mm-hmm. some of the most beautiful plates I've ever seen were produced by female chefs.
In culinary school, one of my chefs called it finesse. And he said, women just have a little more finesse than men. And mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, in the plating sense or something.
Maddie apparently doesn't believe that.
I always love, like, there are certain stereotypes that are, well, that's offensive and don't think that. And there are other stereotypes that are, these are little white stereotypes.
They're complimentary. Like white lies. You know,
like, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Sure, absolutely. I think it's dangerous to make any kind of statements that is based on gender.
Of course.
Just in general.
Certainly.
I don't think we're that politically correct to worry about it.
Exactly. Like, the culinary industry is not politically correct.
No.
Whatsoever.
No, not. No.
And honestly, that's another part of it, too, is like Rob was saying, if women are to expect to be treated the same but don't put in the work, then what difference does it make?
Exactly.
Because they are the stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, it's funny because as I know other people in different industries and I get to know women that are in the professional world, quote unquote, that don't have to actually do physical work
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and I don't mean to put that down, but if they're sitting at a desk and working a 9-to-5, they expect X, Y, Z. But you look at a chef who's putting in 70 hours a week with their child at their parents' house because mm-hmm. they need a babysitter but they're a single mom, but they're banking the payments on their bills and they're busting their ass and people actually earn their respect, then they're happy, you know.
There's something to be said for being in a profession where you can get cut or burnt at any given moment of the day. It changes your mindset. Rather than, you know, it's 9:45, I need to put the mouse down and go have my coffee now.
I'm a robot.
It's just, you know, for us, it's 9:45. I have 3 cold cups of coffee that I sat down and forgot about sitting right here, and I have to figure out whether I'm going to drink them or not.
I famously brew my coffee and leave the house without drinking it.
Yes, she does.
My Keurig bills are high, and my caffeine level is too low.
But, you know, it's I'm really happy. I'm happy to see it, and I'm happy to see that there's operations that are everybody in charge is the high dive.
Exactly.
Everybody in
Rosie's
charge.
Rosie's awesome.
Rosie's amazing.
Is a woman. Is a woman.
Is a woman.
Everyone is a woman.
I likes the women.
They are one.
How much for the little girl?
Oh, that's so creepy. Don't do that.
Well, all right, guys. I would love to continue this, but I am being respectful. You guys have someplace to be.
Exactly.
And you have to take little ones to karate practice.
Yes.
Karate.
Jiu-jitsu, karate. Discipline stuff.
Discipline. The big thing right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think it's really important. There are so many parents that get their kids into activities because they want their kids to be successful and be accepted and all that. One thing sports always did for me was gave me discipline.
Me too.
Right, exactly.
You know, you have to be at practice on time. You have to do what this adult is telling you to do, or,
exactly,
you know, and my parents were never, you know, I was never the my precious angel deserves to play.
Oh, no, me neither.
No,
I had to
no.
work
yeah.
for it. Yeah.
My parents would be like, you want to play? Get better.
Yeah. It's a motivator.
If my parents were there, then, yeah, they would say, get in there and earn your place. But
yep.
Most of the time, I was just there on my own accord, and I learned that early on, and how it carried me through life.
And you gotta work hard.
Exactly.
And I think
hustle.
I think especially an activity like karate where it's mental and physical.
And mm-hmm. self-discipline. The big thing for me is self-discipline because the kids now, I mean, I could go on a whole rant, but I won't. But kids, even now in schools, are given laptops and all that. My daughter's in second grade with a laptop, and she's expected to do her homework online, and she's going on YouTube and finding other things to do because that's what kids do. Yeah. Shoot, that's what adults do. But it's just, you know, it's they love it, and it's been great. So
that's cool.
We're going to keep doing the
karate. You know, and it's well-traveled comedy fodder, but, you know, we are, Rob and I at least, are of an era that if I would have gotten in trouble at school, it's my fault.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
definitely.
Yeah. I'm that way, too.
Not
I
don't because care my what parents
the, there, yeah, there was no, 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 we're going to go talk to this teacher and
oh, no.
see
what I know no. my kids, and no. I know what yeah. they did wrong.
What did you do?
Exactly.
That, yep. was, that was the beginning and the end of the discussion.
Yep.
So
I'm kind of old school in that way,
she
too.
She is.
Even though I'm young.
But that's cool. That's cool, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, I grew up under rather draconian rules, and I turned out okay.
We grew up under Cold War rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
Yep. Well, guys, this has been spectacular. Ashley, where can we find you?
Depends on what day of the week. I'm just kidding. You can always find me on Facebook. The Chocolate Lush is the name of the company, and I'm also on Instagram. Best way to reach me is email at ashley@thechocolatelush.com.
Okay. Any hopes for a storefront?
Not at the moment.
Or kind of just continue to be private?
I'd like to do private and pre-order. I'm really hoping to focus on weddings and favors, private events like that. I just, storefront's not really in my guideline right now or what I'm looking for.
Why undertake the expense?
Well, exactly. Not just that, but she likes doing custom things for right. the event or for that person or for what it is. So
yeah,
our
like
storefront, it would just be, here's what I made, eat it.
Okay. Bigger question. What are you doing in October?
What day?
October 14th.
I'm not sure yet. Why?
No, your calendar just got filled.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Five Chef Society 4.
Okay.
I would love for you to do something for that.
Yeah, we were at the last one. It was awesome.
Excellent.
Actually, on his birthday.
Yeah, it was on my birthday.
Was that really your birthday?
Yeah.
Small bar?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
But I would love for you to participate in that.
That'd be great, yeah.
And that just made somebody very happy because it means they got out of from under dessert.
Nobody can find dessert chefs. No. We had the same problem at the restaurant. Nobody wants to do dessert for pop-ups.
And Rob, let's give your particulars again.
My particulars. You can always find my stuff at photog-rob.com. I'm at various events, anything from culinary to music to just weddings or your first birthday. So...
You're doing birthdays now?
I've done everything. I literally, you really? Name it, I'll shoot it. I'm a whore. You pay me, I will be there. So that's why the calendar's full up till next year already.
Right.
So rob@photog-rob.com, easiest way to get a hold of me. Or find me at an event. I'm easy to spot. I usually have a chef coat on, oddly enough, with my name on it.
And the jet black hair and goatee is relatively easy to figure out as
generally,
well.
Generally speaking, yeah.
And the giant camera.
Hey, I don't want to hear about his giant camera.
Hey, I didn't say
this
it.
This is a family show.
No, it isn't.
News
no,
to me.
It really isn't. Maddie, what about you?
Let's see. This upcoming Sunday, which I believe this episode will be... The day this episode is released, I'll be hosting the open mic here at the Madhouse that Sunday night. And
you usually host on Sundays.
I
do
usually host
on
Sundays. Yes, because I'm the door guy on Sundays, so a lot of times I just stay.
Easy transition.
And Monday, every Monday, I'll be hosting the open mic at the Second Wind in Santee. And next Wednesday, the 22nd, I will be at the Navajo Live on the show there.
Are you on the show?
I am on the show.
Excellent.
So I haven't been on the show there in a couple of weeks, so got some new stuff to try.
That's cool.
Yes, and as always, you can find me on Instagram at Matthew_Bird, BYRD, or on Twitter at JMatthewBird.
And as always, you can find me Facebook, Carl Prohaska, I'm Drinking Less and Other Lies for the comedy side. Shot in a Beer podcast, or just Shot in a Beer on Facebook. And all of our contact information is in our bumper. I am actually performing the weekend of the 24th, 25th, both shows here at the Madhouse on Friday and Saturday night. So if, and we'll, I'm actually putting this out where they can actually hear this and come to the show.
Whoa, oh, yeah.
But more often than not, I put out shows that have already passed. By the time we've released this.
That's not a good thing. No, that means we really burnt not. Through
you can see
our
me
buffer
January
episode.
1st, 2012.
That means I have to have this episode edited by Saturday, Sunday.
That's a good job.
Hey, girl. San Diego, you missed me.
You miss me at such shows, huh?
But Rob and Ashley, thank you guys for dropping by. This has been spectacular, Maddie, as always.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you.
And we are out of here.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow, and I drove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped up out of bed. You can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down. I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I'm searching through my soul for trying to find some extra change. I thought that I knew everything till everything changed. Now I'm standing on an island that is singing into the sea, and all that I can do is just enjoy the scenery. Well, you can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. They say I'm mad. This little box. Well, but you just can't take a lion and throw him into a cage and expect him to be thankful for the shelter that she gave. You can fly, fly, fly on to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. The more you try to cling to me, the less I'll stay. Falling, but I've made it in the ground.
You have been listening to Shot in a Beer. For information about the podcast, just search for Shot in a Beer on Facebook or find us on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Shot in a Beer is also a member of a Modern Professions family of podcasts. For other podcasts you might enjoy and information about live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check the network out on Twitter at amodernpro. Thank you for your continued support of Shot in a Beer.